Hello, everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of The Wrap right here on the Fight Game Media Network. Happy Tuesday morning to you all. We are back here today to deliver a very rare trifecta of recaps for your listening pleasure. We got WWE, Bash in Berlin, NXT No Mercy, and last night's Monday Night Raw going down live in Denver, Colorado. I'm Keela Cash, and by my side, as always, is my co-captain, my right hand, and the advocate for someone who tried their very best to become a first-time NXT Women's Champion. They fell short, but the future is super bright for Ms. Jada Parka from NXT. I bring to you back on the wrap, as always, the one, the only, even though there were two PLEs this past weekend, today, he is still the Scout, and he's still Salty Scott Young. Welcome back, Salty.
Thank you for having me, Keela. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. As good of a weekend as it was, my predictions were really bad and off. So I'm back here salty and humbled.
I love it. I love when you're humbled before me as you take accountability for your awful, awful predictions. Okay, that was directly and deliberately used to spite me. And I love the fact that you were wrong and I was so right on almost all of my predictions. And I hit a bullseye with one prediction in particular for NXT No Mercy, which I'm very proud of myself about. So, you know, tap myself on the back. But we'll dive into all of that momentarily. But let's dive into WWE Bash in Berlin going down live from the Uber Arena in Berlin, Germany. And, you know, for every PLE that's gone international and for PLEs in stadiums, I will say that the visual presentation for these shows in terms of the set is different. It's not generic. It's not basic. It's pretty simple, but at the same time, unique for each show, which I appreciate. It gives me old school WWE when they spent money on a set, had a budget, and made every show feel different from pay-per-view to pay-per-view.
Yeah, and you know, this is some of the influence of Triple H being in charge. These are some of the little things that you're noticing, some of the ideas, some of the pay-per-view concepts, saving match types for feuds that work instead of just having a pay-per-view for it. So these are the little things that are really helping to stand out and just make, like you said, make shows like this feel special. Going to all these different places outside the U.S. for these PLEs, instead of just giving them the generics, like you said, they're making each one stand out and give it its own special feel. Even dating back to, you can think back to the Bad Bunny one, like everything about the presentation from there to what we saw at the Bash, each one of those has all had their own special feel. So it's a very, very eagle eye point.
Yes, and the crowds, especially this year, have been great. I think there's a contest for which PLE crowd is the best. I'm still going to go with France. They were very special for Backlash, but I think that the Puerto Rico crowd last year set the standard for being hyped for all of these big international shows. Germany showed out as well. They were loud at various points during the show. They were the loudest during a particular match, which we'll get to shortly. But let's talk about the opening match of this PLE, which was Cody Rhodes defending his undisputed WWE Championship against Kevin Owens. I thought this was an excellent match. Great action back and forth. And we had the story going in on SmackDown about whether or not Kevin Owens had what it took to possibly go the extra mile to win the championship by any means necessary. So on SmackDown the night before, Kevin Owens astutely noted that Cody Rhodes could be going in with a knee injury because he didn't take the knee when he did his entrance when the pyro would go off. And Cody denied that allegation, saying, "My knee is fine. It's good. You just don't want to fight me because you're afraid that I'm going to beat you and you might feel bad about it when it's all said and done." And Kevin says, "Well, 8 years ago, I won the Universal Championship, but I can never shake the fact that Triple H basically gave it to me and I want to earn this. No excuses. I want you at 100%. So midway through this match, we finally got the knee injury into play and KO had to make a decision. Do you go low or do you maintain your integrity by fighting fairly? And I thought Wade Barrett did a great job on commentary saying, "Here's your chance. Take out the knee. What are you waiting for? Hit the pop-up power bomb on the apron. Take out Cody. Here's your chance." Kevin went low, but he cannot pull the trigger when it counted most. Great near falls down the stretch, but ultimately Cody Rhodes was able to hit the crossroads to retain the championship. And for now, Kevin and Cody are still very good friends. How long that will last, to be determined.
I thought the match was really good. Cody getting that Kofi treatment. So this man opening PLEs on a regular basis nowadays. So the match was good. I think I was okay with it, with KO not targeting the knee, even though there's nothing wrong with it. Like, you chop blocking somebody is not illegal. There's nothing wrong with that. Like, you going to kick his leg after it buckles at the top rope, there's nothing wrong with that. That's on him. His knee buckled. He decided to go for a high-risk move. It's called a high-risk move. So I was okay with it until Cody's pushed him off on the outside and was like, that's it. After that, it should have been all bets off. He should have went for it, like he eventually did, but he should have went after it. Then he should have went to the old school. He should have hit the apron power bomb. Like, make me believe that, yo, we might be on to something. You should have went all in after that. After Cody pushed him, or have just Cody slap the piss out of him. And just be like, yo, stop playing with me. I'm not no child. Stop playing with me. I'm out here. I know what I'm doing. I'm the champion. Don't play with me. Don't play with my name. You should, something like that, and fire Kevin Owens up and really have that man go after the leg. And anyway, by the end of the match, it wasn't like Cody was selling the leg anyway. So it didn't really matter. But, I mean, the match was really good, but it could have been a great match. I give it, I'm leaning towards 3.75, but that might be me being real generous and the crowd just being super hyped for it. So I'm going to go 3.75, but that's me being generous.
Okay, I think that's very fair of you and astute criticism as well, because I do totally agree with you that a chop block isn't illegal. You do that to gain the advantage, and sometimes you got to get a little grimy and get a little dirty if you want to win a championship. It's not my fault somebody goes and injured. I'm going to take advantage of it. That's what you do in a situation. You are going to win by any means, and I do like that fact that we could have went there, as you said, but he opted not to. And it kind of took the dramatics out of the match, that push and pull of will he, won't he, just do it. Ultimately, you trying to win the match, trying to win your first singles championship in years, get a little dirty. Doesn't mean you're going to be a heel when it's all said and done, but that door is open depending how they play it on SmackDown in the weeks to come, because Michael Cole said that Cody will need help eventually against the Bloodline, because Solo Sikoa says he's got next. God help us all. But for my final match ranking for this particular match, I'm also going to go 3.75 crossroads for this match. Very good. Not great, but the fans definitely elevated the match for sure.
Yeah. Nice catch right there. yeah, for sure. I just think it could have been like, this could have easily just been elevated very easily by him just being more aggressive, especially after Cody was like, yo, let's get to this. Let's do it. So it's all right. The match was still really good, but I'm expecting the next one to be great. If there's another one, we might be seeing a triple threat next time. Hopefully it's not a one-on-one. I think a triple threat would be a good way to go. Solo doesn't need to take another one-on-one loss anyway.
No, and the match would drag. I'm just going to predict it right now. I don't need Solo and Cody one-on-one. I think their matches have been very weak. And I think that the moment that people will be waiting for will be Roman coming out to interfere. And a triple threat lends itself to that interference if it comes to pass. So I want Solo far away from a singles match with Cody. Give me a triple threat and we're good to go. And the sooner Solo's out of the championship picture, the better. I need Cody moving on, possibly to Randy Orton heading into next year as we build up to WrestleMania, which we presume will be The Rock vying for that WWE Championship in Las Vegas. As we get to our next match on the card, which is for the WWE Women's Tag Team titles, it was Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill as the challengers going up against the champions, Alba Fire and Isla Dawn, the Witches, the Unholy Union. And this was a solid championship match as Bianca Belair played the babyface in peril throughout this match. She took a beating by the heels. Eventually, Jay Cargill gets the hot tag, and she's over with the people. She cleans house. She lays out Isla Dawn and Apple Fire. At one point, things do get a little mixed up in terms of spots. Everybody didn't know what they were doing at one point. They got it back together, saved the match down the stretch. And Bianca Belair and Jay Cargill are now two-time WWE Women's Tag Team Champions. Overall, I thought the match was solid, and the belts are back on the most over team that can elevate them. But the core issue continues to be getting this division over in terms of viable teams that can get over in this division, who will eventually win these championships from Jade and Bianca Belair, which will facilitate a turn by one of them in the months to come. That'll be the only way to add some stability and viability to this division and the championships.
Yeah, I don't think the division is going to be elevated, but it's a good way to highlight and spotlight multiple women. You know, that way, while we're having Jade and Bianca, we've seen Alba and Isla more in the last 2-3 months than we saw them for years, and that's because of these tag titles. So yeah, the booking of them could be better, but we're getting more women and more matches and better matches. Like, these tag matches are getting better. We will talk about it, the match we saw on Raw, Damage Control versus the Unholy Union. Another really good match. I thought it was a pretty good match. So we're getting more women. We're getting better matches. We're getting more variety of matches. We haven't even got to the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang Gang. They're going to get themselves into the mix here soon enough. So we got a lot. We're not going to get elevated, but we're still going to have more opportunity for women to get on screen. And that's not even to mention we got Casey and JoJo dancing in a club somewhere. So we got a lot going on.
I knew somewhere in this entire analysis they were going to come up. They are somewhere in a club in America raving it out for Labor Day. I don't know where. They're having a time. Come back soon. Be in the division. But in terms of elevation, I think what I mean is that there has to be more than one over team. And you got Jaden. Yes, you do. Yes, you do.
No. You're right. You do. It's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. No, you're right. You do. It's just not going to happen. They don't know how to do that. They have a hard enough doing it with men. They have a hard enough time doing it with the women's singles title. It's just not going to happen. But you'll always have one team being built up to get beat. I'll give you that. That is true.
I absolutely. And for that, I have to look at Paul Levesque and ask a key question. What are you doing? Because this has been a sore spot for you since you got the book 2 years ago, that you don't know how to book this division. Like, you can book for one team to be strong, and then you can book another team to be strong to get the championships. And then the other teams are just scrambling, trying to get over. And that's why you get these kind of cold reactions for other teams who are not over. That is the problem. It's great that Jade and Bianca are the champions. They're stars, obviously, and they can elevate these titles, but they need help. And that comes directly at the feet of Paul Levesque to fix it. It's been 2 years with you with the book. It's not Vince anymore. It's you. So you need to find a way to book this division strongly. But as Scott said, don't get your hopes up. It won't happen, most likely. So we got to settle for one team being over, one other team being somehow over, and everybody else fighting for scraps.
Yeah. And like I said, though, While there's a lot to be worked on, we know we're guaranteed 6 to 8 women due to these tag titles on TV every week. So I'll take that. You know, at least we're getting opportunities. And again, we had a number one contenders match. Those are matches we weren't getting, and we've been through it. We've seen the bottom of the bottom. So I'll take the matches. The direction, I'm sure, hopefully will come, but at least we're getting opportunities and we're being given a reason to seem like we care about the titles.
Yeah, that's better than we were 2 years ago. I will say that as well. Mm-hmm. But your score for this match?
Oh, let me go 2.75. 2.75. 2.75 just jumping over the ropes, no springboards for Jade.
You know, I have noticed that she jumps over the ropes no springboard. Now, granted, I don't blame her. The ropes were slick, you know, for other people at our last PLE a few months ago at the Clash at the Clash at the Castle. I'm not blaming her, Jade. You can do this. You ain't got to be afraid, girl. You can do the springboard crossbody if the ropes are not slick. So one day soon, she'll get the nerve to do it again. But overall, I will give this match 2¾. I don't even know what to say because we didn't get a KOD in this match or a Jaded.
Nah, but we got we probably got 2¾ worth of witchcraft.
Yes. Yes. I'll say 2¾ potions and spells. There we go. There we go. That's fair. All right. So very good match for today's standards of this book division that can sometimes be a choice. Good match. But let's get to, I would say, I'm going to say it, best match on the show. I will say that. It was the strap match. Every time I say strap, Scott is going to laugh, most likely. It was a strapping between Drew McIntyre and CM Punk. And I have to say, we said some things the week before that I still stand by. I thought that in terms of the material that both men were saying leading up to this match, it plateaued a bit for me. And I felt like it's getting a little bit artificial. We're just trying to get to bad blood to get to what we presume to be Hell in a Cell. We just got to get there, get past this, and we'll be good to go. But I will say that the body of this match, for what they gave, was excellent. It was much better than SummerSlam. It was physical. It was violent. And one of the things I do like about this feud is the fact that with CM Punk and Drew McIntyre, it is on site. I go back to SummerSlam, for example. When they had their match, they didn't lock up in the ring. They went to punch it immediately. There's no tradition. There's no decorum with these guys. I remember Triple H and Randy Orton, their blood feud leading up to WrestleMania 25. We're breaking in people's houses. Stephanie gets RKO'd and y'all lock up after all of that. Like these guys, at least with Punk and McIntyre, it's on site. McIntyre attacked Punk from behind, got the match going from there. The strap match element of it can be a little hokey sometimes. We had the red light, green light legit there in all four corners, like a game of Global Guts from Nickelodeon way back when. But it was fine. The rules were a bit tedious by the commentators, but the match flowed. It hit when it needed to. And at the end of the day, CM Punk hit not one, not two, not three, but four go to sleeps on Drew McIntyre. He got his bracelet back. Got the victory, but oh, my dear sweet Punk, the victory about 2 days later would be hollow, but an excellent match nonetheless.
Yeah, the match was real good. I'm going to go, I'll go four GTSs. I think that's a good four. So four GTSs for me. Punk did put the strap to Drew, pause, and like you said, I thought it was real good. I actually liked the lights. I thought it was a good way to kind of let the crowd know exactly who's got it, who doesn't. I think instead of the momentum being stopped, somebody just should have had to go and tap the buckle to reset everything. So wherever the first one was, that's where somebody should have had to go and tap one to reset. But that's just a minor thing. Like you said, the match was real good. It's probably my second favorite match of the night. And I thought it did a good job of bridging it and giving a false sense of conclusion for CM Punk and the way he celebrated. So I thought everything worked really well with this.
I like how both guys are idiots in the sense that when they win a match, they think the feud is over. They think it's done when it's never really done between the two of them. And poor Punk, I will say this, when he got the bracelet back, he does realize it came from Drew McIntyre's trunks, right?
Well, you know, part of it is this is new generation. Nobody knows how to end things. You know, back in the day, you could get in a fight and it'd be the end of it. Nowadays, you got to get in a fight and now it's all over social media. So you got to get yours back or you a punk. So I blame it on social media.
I agree. When beefs should be over, they're not really over. But Scott, you still did not address the main issue of the bracelet being in the trunks of Drew McIntyre.
You worried about a bracelet being in that man's jockstrap. Yes. They are literally strapping each other.
Listen, they are strapping each other, but we have to understand that in the 48 hours since that match, something more disturbing happened if that bracelet wasn't sanitized properly.
And he kissed it.
And he kissed it, which is just ill. He kissed it, and then other things happened on Monday Night Raw, which we'll get to. And I hope that that bracelet was sanitized. I really do. Oh, God. Drew McIntyre is a freak, but we'll get to that later on in the episode.
At Kroger Pharmacy, care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
As we now get to the most heated match of the night, it was the Terra Twins, Rhea Ripley and Damian Priest, versus the Lovebirds, Liv Morgan, the Women's World Champion, and Dominic Mysterio. That's what they are. They're the lovers, right? So they come out there and the crowd is loving it. I must say, for Rhea Ripley, it's always been automatic Cheddar Biscuits. She gets a few bonuses today because she was very, very, very lovely on Saturday. This match was a lot of fun. I loved everything about it, mostly. I thought Liv looked real good, despite that overshot Tope on the outside where Rhea saved her life. But otherwise, everything looked clean most of the way through, some cool spots mixed in. But I have to say that the hottest part of this match was when Rhea Ripley got her hands on Dominic Mysterio. And you know they have that decibel meter when they track the sound in the arena. When Rhea wrapped her legs around Dom's head, the decibel went from like 98 to 112. The loudness in that building for that spot was crazy. The loudest they were outside of the main event. And it was incredible. Like, this is how over this feud is, how much Rhea versus Dom would draw money if they have a one-on-one intergender match. Why not do it? Then, of course, we got interference courtesy of Judgment Day's Carlito and JD McDonagh and Finn Balor, but the babyfaces fought them off. And Rhea was able to get the W by hitting the Riptide on Liv Morgan for the 1-2-3. Really fun match, great atmosphere. And this feud must continue, and I'm very proud to be wrong that this team did not lose.
Yeah, I think this is the only match I got right. This was a lot of fun. Damian and Rhea, I think they have a great chemistry, a great platonic chemistry. No fishy business, no funny business going on. They got a cool swag between them. They vibe really well off each other, and they're both powerhouses. So I think it works really well. And Liv looked pretty good. Dom is, he's improved tremendously. Like you already know what you're getting out of him. So everything was great. You mentioned the intergender match. That's definitely something you could do on Peacock. I think it's a missed opportunity if they don't get a singles match out of it. People would 100% line up to watch that. And Rhea Ripley got a big victory to build herself up to get another title match.
Yes, everything made sense. It all worked. And I do love the dynamic of Dom and Liv. Like, they're all in on this. They sell it so well. When they both go down, they hold each other. Like, it's really good character work by both of them as well. And I'm still shocked to say in the year 2024, Dominic Mysterio is a Kim magnet. Who would have thought he had the Riz off top to carry off multiple relationships in a storyline? Good for you, Poppy. Good for you.
I'm gonna give this 3.5 Riptides, but it was a lot of fun.
I agree. I'm going to go with the same score. Very fair, very firm. Almost 4, but 3 and 3/4 sounds about right. All right, now let's get to the main event. of Bash in Berlin. Now, my co-captain made a very heavy accusation against Cody Rhodes getting Kofi'd by opening the show. Now, we are in Berlin, and we knew who was going to close out the show. It was going to be the native son, Gunther, defending the World Heavyweight Championship against Randy Orton, who is officially 290, supposedly. And this match was great. It was a great professional wrestling match, physical in nature. Gunther lied and said that he was going to bloody Randy up. No, he did not. He did not do that. It was a very physical match, I will say. I will also say that it did get a little slow towards the end because Randy took 11 hours setting up steel steps on the outside just to put Gunther through the announce table. That was very tedious work, but we got back on track. And ultimately, we did have Randy hit the RKO on Gunther to no avail. And to make it official and definitive, Gunther did put Randy to sleep in order to retain the World Heavyweight Championship. We had both men shake hands to wrap up the show. And I thought this was a very strong main event. A little slow in spots, but still very good from two seasoned vets out there that know how to put on a show in front of a crowd that was sometimes into more of themselves doing the wave, more so than the match. And Randy, who is a stickler for like decorum in his matches, he didn't get mad. He rode with it, which shows growth for him because the old Randy Orton probably would have cussed all those fans out.
Yeah, for sure. This is my favorite match of the night. 4.25 finishers from Gunther. For me, I thought this was a ton of fun. I thought Randy looked good. I thought Gunther looked good. I thought they did a good job of protecting the RKO to make it seem like whenever it is hit, Gunther could take that L, so they did a good job there. I thought the sleeper that he put on at the end, kind of out of nowhere, was a really nice touch there also. So I thought everything about this was good. The Gunther got a moment at the end. He got to not only talk to the crowd, he got to really go out and embrace that reaction. I like Ludwig introducing him at the very beginning. I thought everything they did was nice touches. Orton's entrance, I thought, was really well done. So I thought everything about this main event worked really well, a very good way to close out the show. And Orton did a great job in the main event. I don't know if he'll ever pass Triple H, if he'll get another world title, but he's definitely proven to be reliable in these main event slots.
Definitely. He is very reliable to deliver when it counts most. And I love that about him. Will he get another championship run in WWE? He recently re-signed for another 5 years. His contract will run through until he's 49 years old. So it's very possible he could be a champion. Will he eclipse John Cena's record? I don't know how many reigns it would give Orton at this stage in his career. But I do sense maybe one or two more championship runs in him before it's all said and done. And he might work a more reduced schedule moving forward as well. But all in all, a really strong main event. And Gunther has been established as a very strong champion thus far, who is able to take on all comers and maintain his heat at the exact same time, which is very impressive as well. Overall, a very good PLE. If you saw it, great. If you missed it, the replay is more than helpful to get you caught up in everything. As we now move on to final grade for this show, Scott, on 1 to 10 tiers.
Man, let me go with good show, nothing consequential happening. I'm going to go with 6.75. 6.75 worth of a wave.
Okay. I'm going to go 7 tiers out of 10. Very solid show. Enjoyed all the matches mostly. No problems. Now let's get to NXT No Mercy going down live from the Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado. This show had a lot to live up to because Heat Wave was an amazing show by NXT PLE standards of today. One of their better shows they've ever done under this new structure of NXT. This show had a lot of expectations on it to say, can you top it? Can you at least measure up? And I will say it did not. I thought it was a fairly good show. We had some so-so matches here and there. The crowd, compared to Monday Night Raw in the same building, this crowd was kind of dry for me, not going to lie. They did come to life at some points during the show. But overall, I felt like this was on the lower end of NXT PLEs, but still on the solid side.
I think I enjoyed this probably a little bit more than you. Outside of maybe one match, I really enjoyed just about everything else. The stories they told throughout all the matches, I thought worked really well. We got some nice moments. So I thought it was a really good show. Might have enjoyed it a little bit more than Bash.
Okay. All right. Well, let's dive into it right now as we talk about the opening match of the card, which was for the NXT tag team titles. It was Chase University's Andre Chase and Rich Holland versus Axiom and Nathan Frazier for the tag team titles. And this match was pretty good. I will say that I do prefer the team of Duke Hudson and Andre Chase. I think they're the better combination for Chase U. And I do like Duke and Riley Osborne as well. That combo's pretty cool. Rich is all right in the ring. He's fine. But Andre Chase is definitely the workman in this match that can always deliver, hits his spots perfectly, a ring general in every sense. Axiom and Nathan Frazier bring the speed and agility. I love this spot, but Andre Chase kind of did an Axiom by delivering a Spanish fly off the top rope in order to get the near falls. Some great near falls that had me going during this match, but it came down to Chase U falling short. And as I predicted on our preview show last week, Fraxium got the dub. They regained the tag team titles. And after the match was over, as I predicted, because I never trusted Rich Holland, he did in fact turn on Chase U and put Andre Chase on a stretcher to a local hospital when it was all said and done. I'm very proud of myself that I called it when I did.
Yeah, you did make that call. It's a good call. I thought the match was really good. 3 3/4 for me. And Axiom and Nathan Frazier are, to me, the modern day London and Kendrick. I just think their speed, everything about them works really well. Any of them can clean house. Any of them can get the hot tag. They both sell really well. They have exciting moves, but their moveset is very different. I love that team. I think they have a legitimate argument of being the best team in WWE right now. I legitimately believe that. I think you can put them up against anybody and they will not only hold their own, but they're going to stand out. So I'm glad the titles are back on them. That's who you want the titles on for that CW show. I hope they get to show out on that CW show against somebody real good. But I'm thoroughly impressed with Axiom and Nathan Frazier. I think they're the best team in WWE.
I agree. I would rank them right above DIY and the Street Profits in terms of the absolute best in WWE. And they're just a hair above them in terms of what they deliver. All of their matches are so good and they can work a variety of styles with different people at the exact same time. And their matches against Chase U have been excellent. And this match is no exception. Not as strong as what we got at Heatwave, which I thought was outstanding when it was Duke and Andre Chase in that spot. But overall, I thought this was a really good way to start the show. The Rich Holland heel turn, I expected it. Now the question becomes, since he got a little bit over as a babyface, can he get any more over as a heel? We'll see. Because up until that point, the guy wasn't getting no pops at all. Let's see what he gets now with some semblance of a character that kind of sticks on this show now more so than it did when he first arrived at NXT a few months ago.
Yeah, that was a good heel turn. He'll run through Riley. Him and Duke will have a nice big hoss battle. And then him and Andre will probably pair up maybe for the CW debut show, or at least an Andre Chase return for that show, or he'll be at the next pay-per-view. But I think the Ridge will be, I think he'll have a nice little heel run out of this.
I think so as well. Maybe just in time for Halloween Havoc in October as well, as we get to our next match, which was the Battle of the Rascals, formerly MSK, Wesley and Zachary Wentz, the new TNA X Division champion. And I have to say the match was very good. I think that it was a bit tentative at times between both guys. Like when best friends or now enemies, and when your bestie turns on you, you do expect the intensity to pick up a bit. They were a bit nervous at first, but they hit the groove midway through this match. We had a very unfortunate spot because we had Zachary Wynn supposed to be laid out on the announce table to get stumped through the announce table, but the table, as cheap and shoddy as it was, broke. But Wesley says, you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. He did it like a boss, which I appreciated. Then he tries to go for a steel chair. But we have the third member of the Rascals, Trey Miguel, come in to save the day. And that allows Zachary Wednesday, his finisher, for the win. A TNA wrestler gets a dub on NXT PLE. So, yes, this partnership does have some parity to it, which I appreciate. And I thought this match was really strong. And I expect their second match in the catalog to be even better now they got the kinks out of the way in terms of how can we produce a match? We know each other so well. Let's add some more heat and drama to this match moving forward that would give us more heat to work with.
Yeah, and I like the fact that Zach came out with the X Division title. He's a newly crowned X Division champion. I wouldn't be surprised if Wesley goes after that title, maybe around Bound for Glory or something like that. I think that's a big time match. It's a good use of an NXT wrestler at that spot. Or you could do a triple threat between the three for the title. But yeah, this match was a lot of fun. I got 4.25, 4.25 cutters, especially for that last one. As that kid, I thought that was real pretty. Me personally, I thought the stomp from the top rope that Wesley hit, that he was going to hit through the table, to me, it was a little bit more impactful since he went straight to the floor. You know, it was like, all right, that just saved you some cushion. Now you're getting straight floor. So I thought that actually worked out for the better. But you were right about them being a little tentative, but they got into a groove. I think the next match, they're just going to hit the ground running. But I got 4.25 on this one.
I agree. Like, I thought that Wes was brave not to even freak out. Like, I'm going to do it. We're not going to improvise. I'm going to do it. As I said, I was going to do without the table, and he did it. And it was ballsy of him because, yeah, you hit the floor. And, you know, there's no bounce there. And the table being as cheap as it was, it would have been kind of weak then because, like, oh, wow, this table fell so easily when he did it. So cheap table needed to fall when it did. And that move actually ended up being better in hindsight. And I'm glad that Wes, you know, didn't lose focus. He just did it. And that's the mark of a true veteran who's not shook by mishaps that happen out of nowhere sometimes.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, he handled that well, and Zach was ready for it as well. So, again, this match was really good, and I think the next one will be even better.
I agree. As we now get to our third match in the card, which is for the NXT Women's North America Championship, it was Kalani Jordan versus Wendy Chu. And this was part of the show when the fans took a nap. They were very quiet during this match. And I feed off energy when it comes to watching these shows and reviewing them and taking notes. And the crowd is out of it. I'm kind of out of it, too. And the problem comes down to Wendy Chu. So when she came back from her injury a few months ago, she came back as this dark zombie character. We don't know why. One day she woke up dark and we have no storyline explanation to explain why that happened. And because of that, her return has been ice cold. Wendy Chu as a wrestler is extremely talented. She is very good. Throughout her entire tenure in WWE and specifically NXT, she has been given impossible gimmicks to get over. And she is in this spot again, trying to get a gimmick over that is ice cold. It does not work. And Kalani Jordan is still finding her way in the ring. She has her moments when things are off. We had that top rope spot with both ladies falling. They recovered nicely, a mark of we're going to get this together no matter what. The match finished fine with Kalani hitting the 450, which was a lot of 450s on this show. Agents for the future. One or two 450s per night, not match after match after match. Saw that trend alert. Otherwise, I thought things ended nicely, but the body of the match, it didn't do much for me. And Wendy Chu's character is so cold. We got Tatum Paxley coming out for revenge. They'll have a match. At least Tatum's over with her character. At least that's been established. Wendy Chu's character, I don't know why she is the way she is. And if I don't have an answer to that, I don't care about you as a character. And therefore, unfortunately, I have no emotional attachment to your matches.
Yeah, this the match was okay. I got 2 3/4. I got 2.5. I think Kalani's really good. I think they made the right decision. I know I was really hard on it at the very beginning when she was the one crowned instead of Jada, but I think they made the right decision. I thought she looked pretty good in this match. I know the match wasn't great, and like you said, there were some clunky spots, but I thought her overall looked pretty good. There's a spot where she got real aggressive when Wendy did a little sit-up spot, and instead of kind of freaking out, she picked her by the hands up and just started stomping her in the face. And I thought that was a real nice touch for Kalani specifically, because she's more of a happy-go-lucky type character, and for her to show that side. So I thought she looked pretty good in this match. Like you said, the match wasn't great. Nothing to write home about. I've never been that impressed with Wendy Chu, even the wrestler. Like, her best matches have all been lights out matches where you get a lot of bells and whistles. So she's okay to me, but I think Kalani, I was really impressed with her.
Yeah, she's getting better. You know, give her more structure and more time to shine, and she'll get there as a wrestler. I do believe that. I know that we kind of was both surprised when she was the first ever NXT North American Women's Champion. We're like, okay, this is interesting, but she's coming through and she's coming into her own. And we said that would be a test for her. Can you elevate the championship and yourself at the same time? Can you grow into being a champion and elevating yourself as a performer as well? And she's done that so far. And, you know, there will be bumps along the way, but she is learning and she is not rattled by mishaps. She bounces back just fine. And she has been impressive so far during this run. So overall, a fine match. I will give this match 2 split legged moonsaults out of 5.
Okay.
Yes. And for Chase U and for Axiom, I will give it 3.5 golden ratios. Be fair with that as well. All right. Now let's get to our next match, which was for the NXT North American Championship. It was Oba Femi, the champion, versus the Don of NXT, Tony D'Angelo. Tony, at some point, hurt his ankle, but he soldiered through. I thought this match was very good, lacked heat for whatever reason, but both guys went out there and they delivered a very good match. I thought that Oba Femi was very good. And when he was also dealt with a tough situation with the potential Tony D injury, he was able to keep pace and keep momentum, and Tony D fought through it. I didn't know he was hurt. He was working and just scratching and clawing, trying to get the W. Did not work out that way, but I thought both guys rose to the occasion, delivered a very good match, just wanted a bit more crowd involvement. But it could have been that both guys are pretty popular, and it's hard to decide which guy you want to root for at the end of the day.
I really enjoyed this match. I'm a big hoss guy. These two hosses were out there just going at it. I think Tony D has, he's got some of the best fire in NXT. When he gets fired up, you really feel that. And I thought he did a good job of firing up. The suplexes were really impressive with him. The overhead he did off the ropes, that was super impressive. And Oba, the pop-up power bombs. I really enjoyed this match. And we really do need to remember, when we talk about him, just his lack of experience and how well he's able to just be thrown into the fire and just walk out like Daenerys Targaryen, just like it's nothing. Like, it doesn't bother him, because I'm blown away by this guy. These guys are not like 10-year veterans that they're being thrown out there in front of, you know, 10,000 people. These are PC guys. This is the PC that I was told doesn't work and doesn't create anybody and doesn't teach anybody how to wrestle, because these two just put on a really good match. And we can talk about it. We need to start having that conversation. Oba is racking up a really nice resume here on his North American title card. It's definitely not Wesley caliber, but he's got a real nice resume to look back on and be like, yo, I had some bangers, and he's still doing it. So really enjoyed this match. Man, I'm going to go 3 3/4 on this. 3 3/4 of a power bomb from Oba. This was I thoroughly enjoyed this hoss battle.
I agree. And Oba Femi has not had a lot of matches in WWE, but this run has really showed his versatility to face a variety of opponents, whether they're big, they're tall, they're small, they're thick. Like, he's been able to work different styles of matches against different people. Ivar, Otis, Wesley, we had Josh Briggs in the mix as well. We had Dijak in that great triple threat match at Stand and Deliver, which is my favorite Obafemi title defense to date. Like, this guy goes out there and he delivers hit after hit. There's some hiccups here and there, but he never falters. He always is able to rise above it and get better after every single match. And we see this again. And Tony D was a part of NXT 2.0 nearly 3 years ago. He's been in the system for 3 years. He's grown so much. And it might be time to consider when it's time to call him up. It might be that time to do it. 3 years in NXT is a long time by today's standards. It might be time to consider a call up. Probably around WrestleMania time, we'll see about it. But overall, I really enjoyed this match. My second favorite match on the show, as we'll get to our next match, is I also give this match 3.5 pop-up power bombs.
Yeah, that's good.
All right, and our semi-main event is for the NXT Women's Championship. It was the champion, Roxanne Perez versus Ms. Jada Parker. This match over-delivered. This match did the rare feat of waking up a sleepy Denver crowd. I am going to say something that is very bold. I am going to say that Roxanne Perez is approaching Asuka levels in terms of her run as NXT Women's Champion. Scott is shaking his head. He disagrees with that. The reason why I say that is because even though Scott disagrees with me, is the fact that Roxanne Perez is 22 years old and she is pulling great matches out of people who are just starting out, period, with the Lola Vices, with the Thea Hales, now with Jada Parker. That is something that is not easy for a 22-year-old to do, and all of the matches have been very good. And it's not about her carrying people. It's about an equal effort of everyone keeping up with her as well. Jada Parker delivered. She sold beautifully. Everybody in this division cannot sell. She knows how to sell. She knows how to work. She's going to get better. But Roxanne Perez, this run as a two-time NXT Women's Champion, for the work she's done with the people she's been working with, without the Julius coming in and the Stephanie Vaquers coming in, she's held court. I question the start of the heel turn. It makes sense now. When you deliver in bangers like this, you can back it up. You can say whatever you want to say because you have done it in that ring. So I am putting her up there with Asuka in terms of the run she's having as champion and Shayna Baszler in terms of dominance so far in terms of her status as NXT Women's Champion. Very strong match. Hits two pop rocks to get the victory. And after the match is over, we do get the long-awaited debut of Julia coming out. Aura for days. Face card, fantastic. Cheddar Biscuits off top. And she faces down Roxanne Perez. And we know that match is coming possibly for the debut on the C-Dub in October.
Yeah, I agree with you, but I'm not quite ready to put her in the Asuka realm. Asuka was able to drag a model straight off the street into having a really good match in the best of her career in Dana Brooke. So
that is facts.
I'm not ready to put Roxanne in that category yet. And that's not me knocking Roxanne. Asuka's damn near my favorite wrestler, male or female. Like, she's right behind Randy. I'm not ready to put her there. I don't even know if I'm ready to put her with Shayna. She's in that Kyrie level, you know? But I think what you said about who she's pulling these matches out with, I think that's a very good, very good point. And Asuka definitely did have the benefit of working with some really talented people. And the reign is still to this, I mean, she's still undefeated in NXT to this day, but I like what you said about who she's bringing these matches out with. And there is something to that. And the reason I won't put her there is because we'll never see what she can do at her prime in NXT, because she'll never go back. I mean, once she leaves NXT, she's done with this. She's going to go headline a WrestleMania. But you want to put her on the Mount Rushmore? I'm cool with that. I can't really argue that.
For NXT, I got to put her there. Like, for what she's able to do with the talent that's there, that is still learning. That is impressive to me. That is not easy to do. And to wake up a crowd, which is not easy to do. They were sleeping. They were like snoring. They were out of it. But her work with Jada Parker, they woke up. They woke up and they paid attention and they got into that match down the stretch. And that was the first. And that was the first time that crowd was into anything since Wesley and Zachary Wentz. That's real talk. Everything else was kind of like, oh, it's fine. It's all right. Kind of sleepy. They woke up for Roxanne Perez. And that's big time. And Jada Parker more than carried her own. She's going to be a future star, got her own swag and style. That's going to make her stand out as well. But yeah, I really dug this match. And Roxanne Perez, I'm going to be even more brazen. I don't know why I'm being so bold today, but she reminds me a lot of Sasha Banks when she was in NXT. Now Mercedes Moné in AEW, in terms of being young, knowing her history of wrestling at a very young age, studying up the craft, and just having that instinct to be great early on and then getting better when they got to the main roster. That is what my comparison is in terms of they have a good knowledge and craft for this business and how to carry that in the ring and beyond.
Yeah, she's definitely cementing herself amongst the NXT greats. So I'll give this match three and a half Jada hip checks. And I thought Jada looked real good as well. This is a very nice showcase for her. Definitely overshadowed by the debut of Julia afterwards, but Jada looked good in the match. And I'm looking forward to the eventual showdown with Roxanne and her new challenger.
Me too. I will also give this match 3.5 Papa Rocks, even though Roxanne only hit 2. So I appreciate that. So let's get to our main event of the show, which was Joe Hendry challenging All Ego Ethan Page for the NXT Championship with Trick Williams as the special guest referee. Now, I have seen the pushback on Joe Hendry. Never be great, people. That's the message. Never get over. Never be great. The pushback is real. I've been noticing that now. But like I said, online isn't reality. If you're in the building and you're singing the guy's song, he's over. You might not like it, but the people do. And that is the reality of the situation. I thought the match was perfectly fine. I think that Ego gets a lot of flack sometimes for what he does in the ring. I think he's capable and a solid NXT champion. He's done good work thus far. And this match is perfectly fine. I liked it for what it was. Trick was a fun referee. We had interference, of course, down the stretch. And then we had All Ego get the win to retain the championship. And we are moving onward to All Ego Ethan Page defending the NXT championship against somebody on the debut on the CW in October.
Yeah, it looks like my prediction of the North showing up on that debut or tagging on the debut is not going to happen. We might still get a Josh appearance, but definitely doesn't look like it's going to happen. Joe Hendry was probably the second most over person of the night behind the referee because Trick Williams was still there. And whoop that Trick is whenever they decide to bring him, because his presence right now from when he was first just a fast talking guy on the side behind Carmelo to now just being this top level guy in this brand, being the top baby face of this brand, and his whole swag about him is different now. He carries himself different. He knows he's the top guy of the brand. It's been great to see, and I think it's why NXT is probably my favorite show out of the three. It's definitely not the most polished, it's not the cleanest. But seeing guys like Trick and Jada and girls, seeing these guys and girls start from where they were, and even a guy like Tony D being an established guy who you can rely on against anybody, it's a lot of fun, man. And seeing Trick Williams in this spot is really good. The match was – I've seen some people say the match wasn't great. I thought the match was good. The crowd was incredibly hot for it. They were – with them for everything. You don't have to do a bunch of Germans and a bunch of suplexes and flips over the ring to have a really good match. You can keep things basic and simple. And I thought they did a good job of that. Pete Dunne, stories were advanced. Joe Hendry was protected. And I thought they did a good job all around. Ego gets a big win on a PLE. I don't think there's a lot more you can ask for. Another three and three quarters worth of a Joe Hendry song.
I would give it three. I believe in Joe Hendry's. I thought it was a solid main event. Nothing wrong with it. Trick is over as a referee. Love the gold whistle. That was boss moves, by the way. Never used it in this match, but I love the flex of it all. Very cool dude, obviously. And he's extremely over. And I cannot wait until he moves up to the main roster. Whenever that time comes, he's got the track. Def Rebel made a good song for Trick. God bless him. He did one good thing for Trick, and that was create a banger of a theme song that is catchy and you can chant along and sing along whenever you like. And I want to ask you a question, Scott. Did you see the Trick Williams diss video about Pete Dunne?
No.
Dude, I need you to look it up.
No, I did.
Watch it. Watch for the cameo appearances. Watch every bit of it. It is hilarious. And Pete Dunne has said, if anybody from Developmental was in this, I'm coming for all of you.
All right. So he's making diss tracks now. I can't wait to see this. Yes. So.
This was great. This was amazing. You have to watch it.
All right. I will check it out.
Yes, I strongly encourage it. Great cameos, believe me when I say that. But overall, I thought this PLE was solid. Not as strong as Heatwave, but still a solid night of wrestling to kill some time for two and a half hours. So my final score, I'm going to go 6 tiers out of 10.
I'm going to go 6.5. I enjoyed the show. Like I said, this is probably my favorite brand going right now. It's not the best brand, but it's definitely my favorite. Seeing everybody and where they go. So yeah, 6.5 for me.
All right. So let's get to our last show, which was last night's Monday Night Raw, going down from the very same building as NXT's No Mercy from the Ball Arena in Denver, Colorado. Now this crowd and the crowd from No Mercy are two completely different crowds. Energy was different. They were hyped most of the night, which I appreciated. Had me awake and alert as we kick things off with Rhea Ripley coming out. And this was the debut of Joe Tessitore on commentary on Monday Night Raw. And I thought he did a good job. And I will say that for first night in, you're going to have that kind of forced delivery of sounding excited when you're not feeling excited. But I think the more he relaxes into the role, he's going to really figure it out in due time. He has that great storyteller's voice of how to paint a picture of a match. And once he settles in into that groove, he's going to be exceptional. But I thought night one, he was very good. A strong voice that was knowledgeable about moves, story, and the show.
He's the type of guy I think you need a three-man booth with. And the reason I say that is I think he's a great kind of narrator, setting the stage, setting everything up. Like you said, he does a good job calling the moves, calling the match, everything down the middle. He's a very good straight-faced guy. He's somebody where you could have a heel on one side and a babyface on another side. I know a lot of people aren't a fan of the three-man booths, but that's because you had too many big personalities. He's not a big personality. And I think that lends itself more to the three-man booth, where you can have a big heel personality. You can have a big babyface personality. But him and Bit Wade, they're fine. But he's somebody that you could do a three-man booth with, and I think it'll work.
Who would you pull for the third guy?
Honestly, man, I think he's somebody you could pull Byron Saxton back up with. And I think you can make Saxton work now as more of a face voice, with Wade Barrett being more of that heel. Now Saxton can be a little bit more unbearable because Wade Barrett can now sling more slingers at him. And you can just have, you know, just have him being in the middle like, here we go, got you guys to get. But I think he does a good job of that straight face. So I would bring Byron Saxton back.
I remember there was like a takeover preview special years ago, might have been like Brooklyn. And I remember Corey got on Byron Saxton. And I remember that Byron bucked up. And he spoke up and he was great. Since that old man is gone now and nobody's being overproduced, test Byron out again on commentary and see what happens. If he can be himself, if he can be natural, if he can throw lobs back at Wade Barrett and kind of set up Joe Tessitore, I want to see it tested. Because without the old guy screaming in your ear, telling you what to do and what to say, I want to see what a natural, relaxed Byron Saxton will do on commentary. I want to see the experiment. My other guy would actually be Corey Graves, because I really like Corey. I thought he was a great play-by-play guy on SmackDown. Exceptional when someone's out of his ear telling him what to do. So I want to see that same test for Byron if they want to put him back in that role. Because honestly speaking, the backstage roles on Monday Night Raw is pretty overcrowded with Kathy and Jackie running court. Like, Byron, he can get back on commentary. I want to see how he does without being overproduced. Mm-hmm. All right, so back to Rhea Ripley. She comes out to celebrate a victory alongside Damian Priest by beating Liv and Dom at Bash in Berlin. And as always, cheddar biscuits off top. And Rhea wants her championship back, the championship she never technically lost against Liv Morgan. She calls her out, but Dirty Dom comes out instead. And something happened in Berlin. Dom got a black eye. I mean, he's got a mouse and his eye is bloodshot red. So he took a shot in that match for sure. And he got heat, as he always does, set up a sneak attack by Liv Morgan as Rhea leg got trapped between the ropes. And it went after that during this segment before Damian Priest made the save. And that sets up a tag team match for later in the show involving Damian Priest and a mystery partner versus the WWE World Tag Team Champions, Finn Balor and JD McDonagh, the floating head, representing the New Judgment Day.
Yeah, this is a good opening segment. Good way to give Rhea a target for Liv to go after whenever they have their eventual match. So at least she has an out for when she loses that match.
Yes, that would make very much sense as well. So all in all, fun opener. As we get to a very heated and fun match involving American Maid, Scott's new favorite faction in WWE versus the OG Alpha Academy, which was Maxxine Dupri, Akira Tozawa, and Otis versus the Creed Brothers and Ivy Nile. And I thought this match was a lot of fun. Crowd was into everything in this match. Maxxine Dupri, for what she did, was very good in this match. We had some nice high spots here and there, but ultimately it came down to Ivy locking in the Dragon Sleeper on Maxxine to get the victory for her team. And after the match is over, we had Chad Gable calling out the Wyatt Six for a 8-man street fight next week. And Uncle Howdy accepted a challenge. So we will see Nikki Cross as Abigail doing her thing next Monday for the first time in an 8-person tag team match.
I could see the Wyatt Six losing because Uncle Howdy won't be wrestling. I think there's a good possibility of that. And Ivy looked good. You know, people can bash her now, but if she was around in the Divas era, she might have messed around and been champion. This match was pretty good. Like you said, the crowd was hot. I thought Otis looked really good in this match. He's him and Tozawa could do something in the tag division if they wanted to. They could definitely be an underdog babyface team that makes a run after the tag titles. I don't know about winning them. They could win them on a fluke, but they could be a fun tag team to have. But the right team won, set up a big match for next week. And I think American Maid wins next week as well.
All right, we shall see. We're going to check it out and see if Scott's right next Monday night. Uncle Howdy is not wrestling, so that's a good possibility that they could win because they do need some semblance of momentum as a faction moving forward. As we get to our next segment on this show, which is Shayna Baszler versus Zelina Vega. And this match is very emotional for Zelina because, as we know, 9/11 is approaching and her dad was killed in the attacks. Very sad. But she had a match that she was supposed to have a couple of years ago at MSG and it was cut for time, but she was able to wrestle tonight. It was a very nice moment for her. Decent match against Shayna Baszler. She lost, but it was more about being able to pay tribute to her dad, which was something she wanted to do a couple of years ago, but could not do to her segment being cut for time, because I do believe a match is running a bit long on SmackDown that night involving Edge and Seth Rollins.
Glad she got her moment. Well, this was all about chitty, chitty, bang, bang, dominating. And let me tell you, thought Sonya cut a pretty good little promo at the end. I like the little line about all the men want to take us home but can, and all the women, like she said something, it was dope, and like all the women want to be us but they're not. If you want to shoot your shot, take it. I liked it. I liked the little slogan she cut at the end. I hope that's something that's a t-shirt. They got it. She put a t-shirt out there. I don't know if they're gonna take advantage of it, but she definitely put a t-shirt out there.
She delivered a bar. I'm not gonna lie, that was a bar. All the men that want to take us home can't, and all the women who want to take us on, they can't either. So I love it. So it was a bar. I appreciate it. Sure. Solid promo. Trying to get this faction over, get them some heat, which I appreciate. I still hate the name. Pure Fusion Collective. Why?
Sonya might be the only one the guy's trying to take home, but that's a whole nother.
Yeah.
That's a whole nother subject. That's okay.
Won't happen, but y'all can dream.
Yeah, it won't happen. She ain't interested. So she got no interest in what you bring to the table.
No, nice efforts though. You can try your best and you will fail to shoot your shot. As we now get to delusional Phillip Brooks, CM Punk, coming out so happy, so joyous, so thrilled to say, I put Drew McIntyre behind me. I won my strap match. I'm so proud of myself. And now I'm all about making money. I'm not about making friends. In WWE, I have championship ambitions, gold, so to speak. So I'm coming for Gunther and his World Heavyweight Championship. That's what I want. That's what we want. And we're going to go get it. Yay! So he, runs his laps and high-fives everybody, stands on the announce table. He high-fives Joe Tessitore and shouts out Wade Barrett, and then he gets tripped off the table by Drew McIntyre. And I love Joe saying, that's Drew McIntyre in a hoodie. He didn't say, who is that guy in a hoodie? Oh, my God. Like, no, he knew who it was. That man is big and thick. You know that's Drew McIntyre. Who else could it possibly be? So we got the beat down to ringside, and Wade Barrett tried to be the peacemaker. Please don't hurt him. Drew, don't get suspended. Don't jeopardize your career here. Drew didn't care. Claymore Punk off the announce table. I laughed at that. More violence commenced. A second Claymore. We had guys try to break it up, but Drew was after one thing, and that was that damn bracelet. So he takes off the bracelet. He wants to reclaim it as his, but he has second thoughts. On tonight's show, we finally killed off this bracelet. He broke it, took the beads off. And as I said earlier in this episode, on Saturday, the beads were in Drew's jock strap. Okay? Dirty, nasty, unsanitary, disgusting. So he takes said beads that Punk did not wash, put them in his mouth, and then claymored him again. And then as Punk got stretchered out of the arena, Drew McIntyre was on site to continue the beatdown. I enjoyed this. The bracelet is now dead. I'm glad about that. Let's get that out the way. Let's get to the blood feud portion of this battle as we build up to Bad Blood. Because since the moment this feud started, we all knew where it would end. Inside Hell in a Cell in Atlanta. Let's get there. Let's stop talking about bracelets. Let's be on site. Let's shed some blood. And let's be done with this feud finally in October.
Yeah, this is a good build. Really good beatdown. Looking forward to the match. And the only person that's a bigger hater than Drew McIntyre is Cheryl Swoops on white women playing basketball.
Wow. Wow. That is a lob and a jab and a throw all in the same sentence. As we get to our next match, which was a triple threat match, I have nothing to say to counter that at all.
I'm just saying, at least Drew decides to show up to work when he's supposed to, even though he hates the guy. I'm saying.
Scott
clip Hayes. That.
Clip.
Clip that.
Clip that is the new take that for data.
Clip that.
Clip that. Okay. All right. Scott's on one in the midway stretch of this episode as we get to our next match, which is an Intercontinental Championship Tournament Triple Threat. involving Ilya Dragunov, Dragon Lee, and Dominic Mysterio. This is a solid 10-minute match. This match came down ultimately down to Dragon Lee and Ilya Dragunov because Damian Priest ran Dominic Mysterio away after Carlito tried to get involved, took out Dragon Lee, and that led to Damian Priest saving the day. And Dragunov and Dragon Lee had an opportunity to go out there and have a good match, just the two of them. They messed up the standing Spanish fly spot, but they recovered nicely and they carried the match through the rest of the way as Dragunov lands the Torpedo Mascal to get the victory, to secure a spot in that fatal four-way final for a shot at Bron Breakker's Intercontinental Championship.
Yeah, and since Dragon Lee wasn't able to get his brother to sign, he takes another L. And Dragunov gets another victory to be built up to take an L next week, as he'll probably be the guy to take the fall.
Yes. Tears, but it's expected nonetheless as we get to our next match. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire, the Witches, the former WWE Women's Tag Team Champions versus Io Sky and Kairi Sane to become the number one contender for these titles. And this match was solid as Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill was at ringside looking on from afar. Midway through this match, we have our favorite witch, Isla Dawn, causing trouble as we had her pull somebody directly in the line of fire to take a hit. And Kairi accidentally took out Bianca Belair thanks to that assist, courtesy of Isla Dawn, by accident, obviously. And that led to Jade Cargill laying out Kairi Sane as well. And Alba Fire and Isla Dawn took advantage. They hit their finisher on Io Sky. And in a very rare case, Io Sky got pinned clean in the ring as the Witches get a rematch against Bianca Belair and Jade Cargill soon.
Match was fine. We have a little bit of momentum here in the tag division. We at least have teams, real teams, you know, people who act like they like each other. So we at least we have that going on. Instead of Isla, probably should have just left Bianca where she was because she moved her out the way. And so Kairi Sane ended up busting her face open. So that was cool. But you could definitely tell this could be building towards a triple threat on Raw. This is definitely a Raw main event waiting to happen. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll probably be a good match, but nothing wrong here.
Yes, and I did say in my prediction special pick last week that all roads lead back to Damage Control, Bianca Belair's most hated faction, that she can't stand them. The history is bad blood through and through. And this might be obsessive for her again. And this could lead to the fracture for her and Jade down the road. So I do want to keep that in mind moving forward. This is an Achilles for Bianca when it comes to Damage Control. Bad memories, automatic frustration off top. So that should be interesting to see how that plays out in the weeks to come as we get to Sami Zayn and Gunther having a face-to-face standoff in the ring. And it appears that Sami Zayn wants next in on the World Heavyweight Championship. Gunther says no, but Sami says, I want next. I was the last guy to beat you to become Intercontinental Champion at WrestleMania. So I know what it takes to win a championship off of you. And I know that I can do it again. And Gunther says no, but we know that match is coming possibly, maybe, at Bad Blood in Atlanta next month.
Now, everything about this was fine. The crowd's really behind Sami. We know he's not going to win the world title, not on the first try, not yet at least. This screams Netflix premiere, WWE week or something like that. I don't know if this quite makes the Bad Blood card. I don't know if Gunther's next title defense is going to be on that.
We'll see, because we know the NFL season kicks off next Monday and they have to juice some numbers up to not fall too far behind. So that might be a television match with limited commercial interruptions, which I would love to see, because come on, I don't need five breaks during a championship match. That'd be crazy. So if they can pull it off, I would love to see it, but we'll see how they play it in the next couple of weeks, because they got 3 weeks of this, 3 weeks of shows stacked up as they build up for the first major show of SmackDown back on USA next Friday night. As we get to our next match, which was for the IC title tournament triple threat number two, it was Braun Strowman versus Ludwig Kaiser and Sheamus. And this was another solid match. This was supposed to be Bronson Reed in this spot, but unfortunately he got COVID, so he was pulled from this match. Get well soon, Bronson Reed. But Braun Strowman stepped up, and he was taped up after getting tsunamied on the roof of a car last week. Match was fine for what it was. Great action, courtesy of Sheamus and Kaiser, going back and forth as always. Sheamus was in the mix as well until Pete Dunne came out there and hit him with a big-ass shillelagh. I mean, a big shillelagh, an extra large shillelagh. And Braun Strowman was able to beat Ludwig Kaiser with a running power slam to be added to the fatal four-way match to determine who will face Braun Breaker for the Intercontinental Championship. So the fatal four-way is set. We got Jey Uso, Braun Strowman, Ilya Dragunov, and one more guy who I might be forgetting at this very moment.
Let me see if I can find it real quick. I see fatal four-way next week. So it's hold on. Pete Dunne.
All right.
That's it. Yeah, Pete Dunne.
Okay. Sheamus will cross that man next week. Trust and believe that.
I think Braun Strowman and Bronson Reed just flipped spots. So I think Bronson would have won and Braun Strowman would have came back and cost him the match. I think now it'll be Bronson Reed coming back and costing Braun Strowman the match in the same way. I think it's just going to be all chaos. We're going to get all of that going on next week.
Yeah, we got like 12 tsunamis coming up and 5 bro kicks. It's going to be crazy. Gonna be chaos. And the last man standing will probably be Jey Uso, but we'll see.
Yeah, that's who I got to.
All right. So our main event is now the mystery partner per Rhea Ripley. It is Jey Uso and Damian Priest versus Finn Balor and JD McDonagh. And I thought this match was a lot of fun as well. The crowd was into it. They were very hyped for Damian and Jey. And the action was solid. More Judgment Day interference, obviously, this time from Liv Morgan tripping Jey off the top rope. Rhea comes out with her crutch and she is able to hop around and go after Liv, chase her through the crowd. And despite that distraction, the babyfaces were able to win when Damian Priest lands a razor's edge on JD McDonagh. Jey goes up top, lands a frog splash, and gets the W for his team. We have a yeet off to end the show as the Judgment Day scurries and regroups. And this will continue until Damian has Finn Balor one-on-one. But the more important story that has finally been addressed is the fact that for the last 2 months, Finn Balor and JD McDonagh have not defended their tag team titles. Hopefully that changes soon. We saw Kofi backstage talking to Adam Pearce. And in a development that we got to mention, Odyssey Jones has been removed from the active roster page from WWE, and he has not been seen in the last 2 weeks. So maybe that storyline could be a dead issue.
Well, that's good. We don't need to have Kofi and Xavier breaking up anyway. Also, something else to keep an eye on, because one thing we know is that Triple H doesn't do things on accident. Gunther and Kofi had a little moment.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see Triple H is doing a make good. Call me crazy. Kofi's going after that title at some point down the road. That's happening. And I might be willing to put my bet on the underdog whenever that happens and say Kofi pulls the upset. I'm just throwing that out there for down the road. Nothing happens on accident anymore under a Triple H regime. That match is happening. And I think Kofi might sneak it out. I'm just throwing that out there for down the road.
You know what? You might not be wrong, because Triple H knows and remembers what happened on a fateful October in 2019 when that person, who I won't name on this show, demolished Kofi Kingston in, 8 seconds. So it was a sour moment in WWE history is a sour moment for me as a Kofi fan. And I can see a possible vision of Triple H saying, we gonna correct this. I'm planting the seed right now. Might not happen today, might not happen next week, might not happen until next year, but it will happen. And it is very possible that Kofi pulls off the upset W and beats Gunther. You're not wrong. Nothing Triple H does is unintentional. It is very intentional. He wanted you to see Gunther and Kofi look at each other and say, bet, somewhere down the road. No doubt about that.
And the thing about it is, it doesn't, like, if it were to happen, if Kofi were to pull that upset, doesn't have to be a long reign, doesn't have to be this epic 6-10 month reign. You give this man a moment where he can just be the guy, and you let him have, you know, some defense. Like, that's what it's all about. It's about the moments you create, and him having that type of moment over Gunther doesn't rectify or make us forget, but it's like, all right, we at least know you acknowledge what happened. Another thing I wanted to touch on before we wrap, I know we got to get ready to wrap up and touch this main event, but the little things in the production and what they have going on, like, I love the recaps they have at the bottom of the match results from earlier in the night. I know they've been doing that for a little bit, but I just wanted to touch on that. And then also the team they got, the announcers, the backstage interviewers. I love the graphic of showing everybody of who everyone is. So that way when you see them on camera, you're like, oh, that's so-and-so. Like, I love the little sports touch, because that's what you do in a sports game. You'll see all the announcers and all the commentators all in their little graphics. So I thought, like, the little touches they've done have been really nice as well.
Yes, I love the graphics. I love, like you said, the lineup of who's talking. You got your play-by-play person, got your color comment, you got your play-by-play, you got your analyst, you have the ring announcer, you have your backstage interviewers, which I like as well. You got the results running down as well. And even the pre-shows, I like a bit more. I don't watch them all because I have a life. I cannot devote 2 hours to a pre-show. But from what I do see, I like the fact that it is more like College Game Day Live. It is more like a sports pre-show where you run video packages, you run interviews with people, you talk to the talent about their match, and you're on the ground running. You're having press conferences and you're getting people backstage talking and splicing that throughout the post-show as well. So I like that sports feel. I know the Triple H said we were only scratching the surface about what Lee Fitting was going to do in terms of production work for WWE, and we are seeing the fruits of that labor. I think it's a great idea to really make WWE feel more sports oriented in terms of presentation, and that's been long overdue. We've talked about the camera angles being so much better, how things are shot and photographed, and now how things are presented is much better as well in terms of letting us know who's on the show, what they do, and how we get there along the way.
Yeah, I agree. The main event was, I thought it was pretty good. And, I just like the little touches that they've been doing, with everything they got going on. So they've done a good job, and this Raw was pretty good. It didn't really drag for me. I thought it, had a nice pace to it.
Me too. And with that is a wrap for 3 big shows: Bash in Berlin, NXT No Mercy, and Monday Night Raw going down from Denver, Colorado. But before we go, Scott, as always, tends to give us a memorable match of the week. So, Scott, do you have another out-of-the-box match of the week to make note of for us today?
I guess really it might have been yesterday or the day before is the anniversary of the day. Tony Khan had to let go of his favorite toy. And my match of the week is going to be Tony Khan and the anniversary of losing his favorite toy and having to play Boys to Men on the way home. Wow. from sending the termination letter. That's my match of the week. Shout out to Phil.
Wow. You know, I have to say that Cody Rhodes leaving AEW by choice was one thing. Tony Khan having to put in the call to fire CM Punk was another. And I think it shifted that company by a lot. And I think
It hurt him. It hurt him personally.
It hurt him personally to do that because you don't want to gift wrap a guy directly to the competition because you knew that's where he was going to go. But it hurts even more because I think there is a direct correlation with your product being softer in terms of viewership and ticket sales outside of your big stadium shows versus where you were a year ago when tickets were hot and ratings were up and Collision was a show that was anchored by CM Punk and now it's just a show on a Saturday night. Those are facts and figures here. And I know that we don't talk about AEW a lot on this show, but I always said this company peaked in 2021 when you had CM Punk, Adam Cole, and Bryan Danielson all show up a week apart from each other. And after that, nothing could ever really top that. They had the momentum. They had it. They had the audience. They had the excitement. They had it all. And 3 years later, Adam Cole is out injured. CM Punk is in WWE. Danielson is the champion, but when he's not the champion, he's going to be a part-timer. Those are the facts. That is where they are. It is undisputed.
Yep.
All right. And for my actual match of the week, there's a lot to choose from, you know, a lot of options here. But favorite match of the week, I got to go with what I thought was the best match from Bash in Berlin, which was Punk versus McIntyre strap match, sans the lights, which were not offensive to me. But I think Michael Cole telling us that light needs to go off right now. I'm looking at the light like the light ain't off. Lights not off. Lights on. Like outside of that, match was great. Got that feud back on track heading into Bad Blood next month in Atlanta.
Yeah, it was a good match, and it's a good good middle chapter to get us to that Hell in a Cell, which I think they plan on going out there and trying to put on a classic, so I'm looking forward to it.
Me too. And with that, that is a wrap for this week's show right here on the Fight Game Media Network. I do want to thank my co-captain, the Scout, Softy Scott Young, for joining me as we recap three shows, three big ones for your viewing pleasure and listening pleasure today.
Thank you for having me. As always, it's a pleasure to chop it up and talk all things WWE. I'm looking forward to another good week of NXT, SmackDown, and Raw next week. Should be good.
Yes, the WWE week or weeks coming up as we get ready to make that move to the C-Dub for NXT and Monday Night Raw's last few months in USA before they make the move to Netflix and SmackDown returning home to USA next Friday. The final show on Fox going down this Friday. It's going to be quite the show indeed. And I do wonder, SmackDown did turn 25 this year, right?
I think so.
Are we going to do the anniversary anytime before the end of this year, Paul? I'm just asking. You got to commemorate it.
He don't care about SmackDown. He said, that's the Rock show. He can do it.
Yeah. And that famous old saying from Paul Heyman, Triple H don't work Tuesdays. So it still sticks to this day. But we'll see how they'll do very soon. But until then, enjoy the rest of the week, guys. NXT is tonight on USA. Some title implications heading into our next big show, which will be on the C-Dub in October. But until then, enjoy SmackDown. And we'll be back next week recapping SmackDown and Monday Night Raw and bits of NXT as well. So for myself and for the Scout, Salty Scott Young, that is a wrap for all things Bash in Berlin, No Mercy, and Monday Night Raw from WWE. Take care and bye-bye.